Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's very special episode of TCCP is one of my absolute favourite Warwickshire bowlers from the last decade. And I honestly mean that. This guy has given me so many fantastic memories. Over the years, I was absolutely gutted when he left Edgbaston to move to Hampshire in 2018, but it is an absolute honour and a privilege to have him here on the podcast today. Ladies and gentlemen, my special guest for today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast is none other than Keith Barker. So, Barks, first things first, mate, thank you very much for coming on to the podcast. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket and the mighty Warwickshire as well. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Not too bad. Not been doing too much, just looking after my little lad. As I said to you before, just had a PCR test yesterday, so just making sure he's all right. Other than that, can't really do anything now, so I'll just sat at home.
Well, I suppose I have to ask, obviously aside from that, and of course wishing your lad a quick recovery and hopefully a negative test as well, fingers crossed. But aside from that as well, have you been doing a lot during the off-season? I know, what is it now? Oh, my goodness, it's December. When we're recording this podcast, it's been a couple of months since the season's ended. Have you been busy during the off-season, or has it been, I don't know, a little bit of an unwind, per se?
I had a nice little month off, just spending time with my family, and then just started to do a little bit of coaching, some stuff at Solent University and Winchester College. So that's been taking my time up doing that, and started back in the gym at the ground beginning of November, so just slowly starting to tick over again. And then I think from next week, we're all back in, so I'll get going there.
That's a bit late, isn't it, compared to other counties?
Yeah, compared to normal season, I think a lot of counties, it seemed at one stage it was getting shorter and shorter, that period of time where you get a bit of time off. But I think, you know, reaching finals day and like the championship coming down to literally the last day of the season for us, we gave a lot. So I think could do with that rest, basically. So it's been good to have that time off.
Yeah, you most certainly deserve it. It's been a very, very good season for Hampshire, I have to say. Finals day, brilliant. I was actually there for that for the first time ever. Brilliant, brilliant occasion. I'm sure we'll talk about that as the podcast progresses. And yeah, that championship running was something else, wasn't it? Heading into that final round, Hampshire versus Lancashire up at Egbert, and then Warwickshire versus Somerset at Fortress Edgbaston. Absolutely magnificent. But before we jump the gun and we talk about 2020, Barks, I want to take us all the way back to the origin of your cricketing journey, if I may. So right at the beginning of the Keith Barker cricketing story. So, Barks, what were your first ever memories of this game, either playing or watching cricket? Do you have any memories that you can kind of recall upon, per se?
Watching cricket, I'd say it was pretty much watching Brian Lara just bat for a long time and wishing that I could bat like him. That was pretty much it. And then that was at a very young age. And then my first game, I was 6 years old. I replaced a lad in the under-13s who couldn't make it to a club game. So I was chucked in at the deep end. One of those, I was that small. You know, when the pads are that big, you just run straight leg. You're just going to fall over at some point. That was me. And those were my first few days, basically, of really getting to grips with cricket.
Yeah, I can relate to those. I used to have massive, massive batting pads. As I said, they didn't fit me. They were far too big. But to be honest, luckily, I didn't have to use them that often. I'm a tail ender. For those who know, my batting average, career batting average, 11.5, right? Without the big, thick outside edges of my Bear cricket bats, it would probably be, what, 3.5? To be honest, I do like a good outside edge.
They all count. Doesn't matter. They all count.
They do indeed, Keith. Yeah, they most certainly do, fortunately for me. Otherwise, we would be averaging single digits. But in those early days, you have mentioned an absolute legend of the game of cricket, Brian Charles Lara, here in the Midlands, immortalised by that 1994 season with the Bear and Ragged staff, over 2,000 runs with an 89 average. Absolutely staggering cricketer, seventh all-time leading test run scorer as well, which is incredible. But aside from the great Brian Charles Lara, did you have any other kind of role models, idols, icons in the world of cricket itself that you tried to emulate and look up to in those formative years, per se?
I'll be honest with you now. I'll be totally honest. The only people I looked up to were my brothers. My brothers at my actual local club. My brother was, my oldest was captain. My other brother was number three batsman. I think scored most runs in the league at the time. And it was kind of just wanting to be like them. And with my next oldest brother being 7 years older than me, I was fortunate. He played a lot of cricket with me. And there was some, it felt like test matches just in the driveway, him steaming in from across the road. If the cars were in the drive, we're in the back garden and like just a bit of spin cricket. Those were my earliest years of like trying to emulate my brothers and trying to be better than my brothers. And you know, I'd probably say maybe if you ask them now, they might say that I was probably the better one out of the lot, but I know that most of them will think that they were still better. So I let them do what they want.
Well, that's sibling rivalry, isn't it? I'm like that with my brother, to be fair. But when it comes to cricket in this family, I mean, that says a lot when I'm the better one. It really does with my 11.5 batting average. My goodness, there's a reason why no members of the Viles family are in county cricket playing for Warwickshire. But I love the description of that, by the way. Driveway test matches. Okay, that's a brilliant, brilliant description. What was your role, Keith? Were you a bowler, batsman? I mean, I suppose you wouldn't have a keeper, but...
I was doing both. So I felt I was batting for my life against my brother, and then bowling, it was just playing fetch, basically. I was so competitive that as soon as I get hit over my head across the road, I'd be sprinting across the road without even looking. It's silly. And then just sprinting back to bowl quicker and then going further and further. But it made me try harder. I think that's what helped me. All those hours of just playing a lot of cricket with my brother made a big difference.
Well, I'll tell you what, Keith, it's a lovely, lovely journey into the game. It really is so family orientated. We always like that here on the podcast when you do have that family element. And in terms of that early cricketing days, I suppose, and bringing in another sport, which is football, and I suppose we do have to talk about football as well. Why did you choose football over cricket in those early days? Because having listened to that, you clearly enjoyed your cricket and those test matches did get very competitive. But what was it about football in those early days that drew you in as opposed to cricket?
I don't know how this will sound. I found that I had to, it was a lot, football wasn't natural. I had to really work hard to get to where I was. And I was enjoying cricket till I got to about 14, 15. Went with England under 15s. And from being used to kind of batting at three for lengths and opening the bowling and doing quite well, it then seemed a little bit different, which I, 15, you think you know it all. But I felt as though I should have been doing more. Like, I was kind of categorised, well, you bat and bowl, so you're an all-rounder, so you come on second change and bat eight. And I was kind of in my head like, I average more than anyone. Like, I should be at four, and you know, I bowl pretty quick. I probably bowl slower now than what I did then. you know, I felt as though I should be doing more. And I felt like, you know, if this is the way it is, I feel like I'm being limited. And I just thought, I'm enjoying football. I'm having to work harder for it. It didn't take as long. It didn't take as long to do. So it was like a 15, 16. And I thought, yeah, that appeals to me. And I did take that route of football. But it was weird, actually. I got offered, Blanks tried to offer me a contract, I think when I was like 14. But that was, from what I was aware of, that was stopped by the board. They thought, no, they didn't do it for a Flintoff. They're not going to do it for myself, which perfectly understandable. And when they did offer me a contract when I was 16, unfortunately, 3 days before I'd signed a contract to become a professional footballer, because I didn't know if they were going to or what. So I just signed whatever came to me first, and that was football. So I ended up taking the football route.
That's interesting. I mean, this is such a unique facet into the game. It really is. It's such a unique pathway. I can't say we've had this on the podcast before, and it is something which has characterised your cricketing journey, Barks. And in hindsight, this might be an easy question, to be honest, but do you regret taking the football contract early? Do you wish you would have taken the time to have that Lancashire contract, experienced county cricket for your home county? Or do you think in hindsight you made the right choice? I mean, you've had a fantastic cricket career since. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I think, looking at it now, I think of where I was at that point when I chose football, from the cricketing stance, I was quite a bit ahead of what my age group would have been as in development, but they were definitely catching me up. And from that happening, you never know, if I'd have signed, I could have gone on and excelled again. But at the same time, with others catching me up, I may have lost a bit of interest. I don't actually know what would have happened there. But having that time out of the game, I think probably did benefit me. Because I was able to make, I was fortunate enough to be able to play two sports, but the mistakes that I've made in football, I was fortunate enough to correct in cricket, of just actually applying yourself to train more, do more, and, you know, give yourself the best chance, which I don't think I did in football. So that definitely benefited me coming back into cricket.
Well, that's a very, very honest assessment in hindsight. It really is. That's a very, very honest assessment. And I suppose from your footballing days, because you did play quite a few, you know, you played for quite a few teams, Blackburn, most famously, Rochdale, Circle of Bruges as well in Belgium. I mean, that's pretty cool. But in terms of your football days, when you were going into the world of cricket, going back into the world of cricket, were there any transferable skills, any lessons that you learned from the world of football, which you could take into your cricketing journey?
In football, it's all you dog eat dog. You've got to do it yourself. And the good thing about coming into cricket is that people were open to talking to you about what you could work on or things that they've made mistakes on and what you can just learn off. But the cricketing side of stuff, football side of stuff, it was, you had to find your own way. And I think that helped me kind of get to grips with coming to cricket. And, you know, my first thing when I came to Warwickshire was, all right, I've played probably from when I stopped playing cricket at 16 till I was 21, I've played probably about 15 games of club cricket. So, right, you've got to get yourself in the indoor and get that bowling machine ramped up, get a forward defence, like learn to not try, like, you know, close that gap of not getting out bowled or LB and try and learn to leave and know where your stump is. And that was like something I drilled for a whole winter. So that was my main focus. And from football days, it was kind of just, you think, oh, you've got a chance of making it. If you make it, you make it. Kind of, you just think that it'll fall on your plate and you'll be able to just take it from there. And that's not how it is. So learning from that experience and actually transferring my skills from, well, transferring what I learned from football is, don't expect people to do it for you. You have to do things yourself, or you have to at least search for things yourself and ask for a bit of help on the way. That was the main thing I learned from football coming into cricket.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's good advice, not just for football or cricket, but life in general as well. I mean, you do have to do things for yourself, but also don't be afraid to ask for advice. And in the game of cricket, what I found here on the podcast is that people are so, so willing and open to give it as well. You just have to take it on board. You have to put it into your game. And that's how you improve, in particular, if you're a young cricketer. And I suppose in those early tentative steps into the world of county cricket, Barks, I have to talk about Warwickshire. And apologies in advance, listeners. This is where the conversation may get a little bit biased from the resident Bears fan here on the podcast. But what were your initial impressions of Warwickshire County Cricket Club in terms of Edgbaston, the facilities, the club itself, the members? What did you make of the Bear and Ragged staff when you first saw it?
I thought, well, it was such a big club to come to. I remember playing in for Lancs as a kid. And I didn't really know much about Warwickshire, but then obviously moving down to Birmingham and going to the ground and being shown around and stuff, it was like, okay, this is huge. Facilities have always been great there. And knowing it's such a big club, it's like, these are the standards and I've got to try and do everything I can to live by those standards. And I was fortunate enough to have a successful time there.
You most certainly did, yeah. 497 wickets for the Bears over the course of your career and 4,497 runs. I mean, quite nice for the statisticians out there, to be honest. That's quite symmetrical, I suppose. 497 and 4,497. But Keith, in terms of your time at Edgbaston, what do you remember from your debut for the Bears? Walking out onto that pitch for the first time representing the Warwickshire First 11, what can you remember from that day? And I suppose how prestigious of an occasion was that for you personally to represent the Bear and Ragged staff?
Well, just the fact of me actually being in a Warwickshire kit and walking out to play for the first team was nerves just setting straight away. Oh my God. this is such a big occasion. Just don't mess up. Don't mess up. It was almost too much to take in. It was like, I need to try and stay focused on this game. And like, you're looking around thinking you can't be drifting in the field. You can't miss one bit. You've got to keep your eyes on the captain. Like, by the time I finished that game, I was absolutely drained. I think some people are pretty good with pressure. At that point, I was so nervous and almost couldn't take it in as well as what I want to, because you're just trying to make sure you're not the one to mess up and that, you know, you get another go at it. But it was just a proud moment, proud moment. I never thought I'd actually, from being released from Blackburn Rovers and then having a few issues at trying to get trials elsewhere and almost signing for a football club, and then a new manager comes in and says, no, we're not interested in that player, we're looking at this squad. It was almost like, how have I managed to be in another stadium in a different sport? This is mental. But it was just great, absolutely great feeling. Unbelievable.
Well, yeah, again, it comes back to it. It's one of the most unique journeys, I think, in recent county cricket memory. It's absolutely insane. You've gone from playing for Blackburn, Rochdale, Circle of Bruges, name but a few. And then all of a sudden in 2009, you're playing for Warwickshire, one of the biggest clubs in county cricket. It's an amazing journey. It really, really is. And in terms of that debut, do you remember your exact scores, your bowling figures as well? Do you remember those stat lines from that day?
Somerset at home. And I think I got 22 with the bat. I think it was 22, 18 or 22, something like that. I can't remember my bowling figures at all. And I'm not too long after that this is a memory I'll never forget. It was Somerset away. And it was a T20 game. And I dropped a catch off Neil Carter, Craig Keyes, where I was down at third man. And that's where I learned I really need to work on my fielding more than anything. As it just, tell you what happened. So basically, as we run out onto the pitch, I'm just kind of drifting on. And apart from keeper Tim Ambrose, everyone else sprints to their positions. So I'm like, okay, I'll go over to here. Not really knowing that that's a part of the ground which is a little bit bumpy. So I had a catch that I dropped down at third man. Trescothick then paddles one to me. I got to try and get a run out. Bobbles through my legs, four runs. Crowd were on me. And then you could tell, I think it was Hildreth and Trescothick realised, this kid can't field, let's utilise that. And every time the ball came to me, there was just fans, you could feel, and it was like, God, please just pick this up clean, off the kneecap. And it's like, oh my God. I remember more of that just because of how embarrassed I was that I messed up so much. But the actual first game against Somerset at home, I do remember batting a little bit. I think Trescothick actually bowled at me, which I was surprised at. I'm sure he did. So I vaguely remember that, but I remember the away one more because that was the most humiliating I think I've been on a pitch before.
I'll tell you what, Barks, in your early days, quite a few memories against Somerset, and we'll talk about 2010 as well, yeah. But that's quite a funny first season, 2009, for different reasons. You actually scored 28 from 42 in that first game. So you got six more runs, bowled by Peter Trigo, and then figures of 1 for 47 from 10 overs. Do you remember your first wicket, by the way?
No.
He still plays for Somerset.
Can't be Hildreth, was it? Was it actually?
Yeah.
Was it really? I didn't know that. Did not know that.
It was indeed, yeah. James Hildreth for 20 runs. That's your first ever wicket.
I'll take that.
Yeah, not a bad wicket at all, James Hildreth. One of the most unlucky players, to be honest, in county cricket. Should have played for England, but it's quite difficult, isn't it, when you live in the era of Ben Stokes and Johnny Bairstow in the middle order and Joe Root as well. Yeah, it's just one of those, but ridiculously, ridiculously good batsman. And 2010, Barks, I did allude to it there, the CB40 final. We have to talk a little bit about this. This was an incredible game. The first trophy that I saw Warwickshire lift, because I started watching cricket in 2008 with the IPL. 2009, I went to my first ever Warwickshire game, which was a CB40 game against Glamorgan. So technically, your first season was my first season as a Warwickshire fan as well. So that's, you know, quite a bit of fun trivia for today's episode. But 2010, Lord's final against Somerset yet again. What can you remember from that incredible final?
I remember it quite well because I had injured myself in April with my knee. And I spoke to the physio. He's still there now. Great guy.
Gerhardt.
Yeah. And I said, look, my knee feels weird. It don't feel right. This was at Leeds Uni. We played away. And he just said to me, can you run? I said, yeah. He said, does it hurt? I was like, no, but it feels like it wants to crack. He said, if you can run and it doesn't hurt, you're fine. So as the season went on, got to a stage where I started to have a bit of a limp. And when I was walking up steps, and I thought, I don't know what's wrong here, but fine, I'll keep going. By the time we got to that final, I was on so many painkillers it's like this one big last push, let's get through this game. So I remember it cleared because of that. And then I remember coming on, I think I got Trescothic out pretty early. And then Trigo out pretty quickly after that. And then I was involved with a catch, I think Keys West it might have been early on as well. So it kind of really got us, like got me really uplifted and like, just come on lads, we can do this. And then I remember coming into bat and getting smashed in the face off my bowling coach for Hampshire was obviously Alfonso Thomas. So it was like, wow, that's lived me forever because I was put on the big screen and it just kept getting replayed while I was out there and everyone just kind of sighing and making noises every time it crashed into my helmet on the screen. Obviously going on to win, it was an unbelievable feeling as well.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. An incredible, incredible day. I mean, I wasn't there, unfortunately, at Lord's for that, but Ian Bell, 107. What an innings. Absolute master.
Special innings. It was an unbelievable feeling. We worked so hard, and I don't think we had the best season in terms of Red Bull either. It was kind of that was the thing that kept us going of, you know, let's get over the line with this. I think, actually, the last game of the season, we played Hampshire, and I think we could have gone down into Division 2, but we managed to stay up, and that was like a relief, and like, right, let's go on and try and win this and that. And we managed to, it was a great game.
It was indeed an absolutely remarkable game. You finished with figures of 2 for 33, and with the bat batting at 3, I do just want to know about this actually in a second, but batting at 3, 3 from 10. And Alfonso Thomas, I do remember it, he was absolutely peppering you with the short balls. It was absolutely lethal. It was like you're playing at the Wanderers or the Wacker, not Lords, but yeah, fair play. I mean, it was a good bowling spell. But I wanted to ask about that because in that season, it wasn't just for the final, but in the CB40 in general, you'd been batting at 3 throughout the entire season. Why was that, Barks? If you could just, give us some insight.
I played the old Champo game. And I went to Ashley Jones and said, look, I'd like to be, I feel like I could go a bit higher up the order and just, get myself in earlier. And he actually said, yeah, no, we've been thinking about that. So I thought, oh, brilliant. And then next year I thought I'd be put at 3 with a white ball. I was like, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean that, but I thought I can't say anything. So I just kind of kept that as it was. And I was given license to just go in and try and get on with it. Obviously, Neil Carter would be in before me, and it was kind of, you two just go. If it comes off, it comes off. If not, don't worry about it. But I remember the boards game with Alfonso bowling at me. His first ball was back of the length, and I just thought, I've not picked this up at all. I remember thinking, I've not picked up where that went. I just reacted to where I thought it was. And I thought, if he bowls it there again, he's got 45. I've got a swing. I'm in to just get on with it. If I get something on, it's 4. If not, I miss it. But if I get out, I get out. And as he bowled it, I just thought, it's somewhere short-ish again. I don't know where it is. I just swing. And I was about 3 seconds off. he sussed that out pretty soon, to be fair to him. He was a very good bowler, Fons. Very good bowler. Very skillful, and he was switched on when he was bowling.
He most certainly was. Yeah, absolutely outstanding for Somerset, really was. I mean, he had multiple seasons where he's taken like 50 plus wickets a year is remarkable, his consistency. And before we get into the talk of arguably the most famous trophy of that era, which is the 2012 County Championship, and we will discuss that at length, I have to ask, because you mentioned Alfonso is now your bowling coach at Hampshire. Does he bring that up quite often? As a bit of a sledge, bit of banter.
The time I've been at Hampshire, he's never brought it up once. I've been the one to bring it up, but he kind of just would brush it he wouldn't really say anything about it, which I was surprised at. But it's something I'd bring up in front of the lads, like how he did this to me and whatnot. But no, it was just, me that bringing it up more than anyone else.
That's quite surprising, but fair play to Alfonso. Modest then, humble. He didn't just come up and start, you know, shoving it in your face. Yeah, that would have been quite the first impression, actually. Do you remember when I got you out in 2010? But no, moving on from 2010, Barks, because that was a remarkable final. It really, really was. And 2010, you mentioned as well the Red Bull stuff. Because we didn't go down, I thought that was the real catalyst, which kickstarted our golden era, which was 2010 to 2016. I mean, the amount of trophies we won four trophies, one every single 2 years. It was incredible. 2010, CB40, 2012, the championship, 2014, the Blast, 2016, the Royal London One Day Cup. Lost two finals as well in 2012 and 2014, respectively, against Hampshire and Durham. But 2012 was incredibly, incredibly special, wasn't it? Just that year, winning the championship as well against our Midlands rivals, Worcestershire, at their own ground of New Road.
Nice one to finish on, yeah.
Exactly. You couldn't really write a better script than that as a fan of the Bear and Ragged staff. I have to ask, Barks, was that the real highlight of your time with the Bears? Was 2012 the pinnacle of your time with the club?
Definitely. Because we, obviously, the year before we finished second as Lancs beat Somerset, and we were at Hampshire again, and we couldn't get over the line there. I think it was such a... I think Ashley Giles just kind of was like, we're going to go hard and we're going to make sure we get it next season. We've come so close and we worked even harder than we ever had done. Every winter there was a focus, and it was a lot of Red Bull focus, but this time around, 2011, the winter there, it was kind of, we are going to get that trophy. And it's always good when you start well, which we did. And I think we kind of just stayed at the top of the group for most of that season, which, you know, as the season gets closer to finishing, you're like, we can do this. We're still top here. And this team hasn't won. You've seen the league grow a little bit. And that, I think that just kept us ticking, basically. But yeah, 2010, that probably did kickstart the actual thing of, we need to get a lot better with our Red Bull. And there was a big focus then, coming from nearly being relegated 1 year to coming to the last day and getting beat. It was kind of like, we've made huge leaps. We're going to go again and win it. And that just kind of got us in a winning mode over the next few years.
It most certainly did. And I'll tell you what, to be fair, with my support of Warwickshire from 2009 to the present day, couldn't really have chosen a better era, to be honest. It's been absolutely remarkable. Trophies pretty much every single 2 years. We've been incredibly fortunate as a county. But 2012, and lots of Warwickshire fans and members will say this, was just so, so special. It really was. I mean, it's the first time we'd won it since 2004 as well. It's been 8 years since we'd lifted the championship. And the way that we did it, absolutely hammering Worcestershire. I suppose, Barks, I have to ask, what do you remember from that game in particular? You can tell I'm a Bears fan, can't you? By the way, I keep on bringing that up, the Midlands rivalry. But obviously, you know, it's bound to happen as the resident Warwickshire fan here on the pod. But what do you remember from that game against the Bears at New Road and lifting the county championship trophy?
I think the start of the game, before the toss, Jim Troughton had said, we talked about the wicket, and it was kind of, we want to bat first. We might lose a few wickets. If we lose two or three, we'll take it, but we can bat big and then look to bowl them out twice. Obviously, we lost the toss because we were bowling first. I wasn't expecting me and Wright to bowl them out within a session, taking 5 wickets each. But it was one of them. We knew it was like one big push to not muster over. If we can do that, then we could bat, and we were very good at batting a lot of time, we'd be all right. And with bowling them out in a session, it was kind of like, wow, we are pretty much there. We've just got to bat how we have been all season. That's bat time, bat long, one or two hundreds on the way. And I think Chops get 100 that innings. I think he did. And there was a few other runs. We had Ian Blackwell, who played a massive part towards the end of that season. And I remember batting with him, and he was just against one of the spinners. He pretty much camped down on one knee and was just slog sweeping everything for 4 or 6. So we were set up brilliantly towards the end of that game. And Yeah, I kind of remember Wrighty running into Alan Richardson and just thinking, it's coming, this wicket's coming, that's it, game one. And just seeing middle stump, I think it went flying. It was like, we've finally done it. It was great, unbelievable.
Yeah. What a season, what a campaign, and what a victory that was at New Road. And just for the listeners out there, just to give you a little bit more context, you mentioned both of you taking a fifer in the first innings, but yourself, Keith, match figures of 8 for 75. Not bad at all. Chris Wright, 9 for 89. So 17 wickets between yourselves. That is absolutely ludicrous. And in terms of the wider county context as well, I mean, Wrighty was the second leading wicket taker in the entire competition. Took 62 wickets. And Keith, yourself, 56 wickets. Seventh leading wicket taker in the entire championship. So I have to ask, with you two, and you two really were, I've said this on the podcast before, it's like having the Anderson and Broad of county cricket. It was absolutely insane. Every single game, it's like you two would pick up at the very least 10 between yourselves. Literally every single match, it was crazy. And then Jeetan as well. Jeetan took 51 wickets in that season. As if that wasn't enough, 110 between you two. We had Jeets to mop up the scraps, I suppose, that you two left. But in hindsight, do you think yourselves and Wrighty could have been in line for an England place? Do you feel as though you two could have pushed a bit more for a place in the Three Lions lineup?
I think, obviously, Wrighty did go on some Lions tours. And I feel he was, before his injury, he was on his way to potentially getting a call-up. Unfortunately, he got a stress fracture in his back, which then really changed things for him. But he was seriously on his way to doing something special in the game, I felt. Myself, I got a Hong Kong Sixes tour, which was 4 days worth of just what I saw as a bit weird, but I took what I could from that, and that was me. I'd like to thought I might have got some sort of tour, as I don't know who else has been in a winning county championship team and taken 50 plus wickets and not gone on a Lions tour, but they obviously saw what they saw and thought, no, he's not what we're after, so just get on with it, basically. Get on with it and try and be as good a county player as I could be.
Crikey, I'll tell you what. Well, I've said this on the podcast, and I imagine for the listeners, probably rolling their eyes at this point because they know what's coming, but if I was the selector, you two would have been opening the bowling. It was absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And I suppose talking of the bowling attack, the wider unit, because it wasn't just yourself and Wrighty, but we've mentioned Jeets, absolute legend of the club. We had a relatively young Chris Wokes as well, who was just coming up to superstardom, basically. Next year made his debut for England, didn't he? In the Test arena against Australia. And then we had the likes of Darren Maddy. We had Ricky Clark. As if that wasn't enough, we had Boyd Rankin, the enforcer, to come in and bowl some shoulder line deliveries.
Yeah.
Would you say, Keith, and I know this is going to be a hard question, because Hampshire, right now, you've got a stellar bowling attack with the likes of Mohammed Abbas, Carl Abbott, Brad Wheel, Scott Curry, Ian Holland, to name but a few, and Mason Crane and Liam Dawson, just for good measure. But was that 2012 Warwickshire bowling attack the best bowling attack you've ever been a part of in county cricket?
I think as well, there's another name you forgot to mention, Neil Carter as well, which he played early on, and he was still getting that ball down there sharp, even though he was the end of his career. I think for bulk size, of the bowlers that you had, most of them were international bowlers, played for England or played international for the country at some point, which is pretty special. So I would have to say, with that bulk of bowlers, yeah, pretty unique, really. I was very fortunate to be a part of that.
Well, to be honest, Barks, you were a brilliant part of it. You really were. And in fact, your name has come up so many times. We've had the privilege, actually, to have a number of that squad on, the likes of Darren Maddy, Jim Troughton, Jeetan Patel. Yourself and Wrighty come up every single time. And in fact, Jim Troughton, who had a long county career, said that was the best bowling attack he ever had. So, I mean, that's pretty big praise, to be honest. And it was a ridiculous bowling attack. One of Warwickshire's finest ever, probably up there with the mid to late 90s, to be honest. And yeah, as a Warwickshire fan, let me just tell you, it was good to watch. Very, very good to watch. But Barks, as this is 2021, unfortunately, no longer with the Bears. Left in 2018, and I'm going to be honest, that day, that final day of the season against Kent, one of the most bittersweet days I've had as a cricket fan. Because we won the trophy, we hammered Kent by an innings as well. But at the same time, Chotty left, you left, and Wrighty left. It was a really, really, it was a bitter pill to swallow to have all three of you leave at the same time. Three guys who, as a younger Warwickshire fan, I mean, I'd grown up watching week in, week out, basically, and seeing you winning trophies for us pretty much every 2 years. It was quite incredible, really. But in terms of that, I don't know, the initial closing stages of your time at Warwickshire, when did the decision to leave Warwickshire come about? When did that first enter your mind that you needed to search for pastures anew?
When I was told I wasn't going to be getting a new deal.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. I was told, Ash, that obviously you have appraisals during the year, and two out of the first two, which I think there was like one in May and then one in June, July. That's when mine were anyway. I was told that I won't be being offered a new deal, and that I think my best days are gone and I don't give enough to the squad. What I got from it is that Ash wanted change, and I still felt as I had a lot to offer, to be honest. I had a lot to offer, like, 'cause I felt as though I did try and look out for the younger lads, and especially the lads in the seconds and stuff like that, who would come and ask for help, whether it's to do with the cricket or coaches they may have been struggling with or contracts or whatever. I felt as though I was doing a lot that I could. But when he was saying that stuff, I thought, I don't feel as though this is genuine, but I feel as though he feels that my time is up. So I remember my first appraisal, he mentioned that, you know, we may not be looking to sign you again. So just to let you aware that you might end up leaving. So I was like, okay, fine. And then the second time around, I was told again by him, but look, basically, look, these are the players we're looking at. Jordan Clark, there was, I forgot half the names. There was a Chapel moving for, who, young lad, moved from Leicester.
Zach Chapel.
You had Ben Rain. To mention a few, that's the kind of way we're looking to go. We're not going to be offering something. So you need to be aware that, you know, it's quite serious. You need to kind of basically look. I was thinking, well, I've got to look at my options, because that's what I've been told, that these are the players looking at. We're not going to renew your contract. So spoke to my agent, and I almost moved. There was at one point, me and Wrighty have the same agent, where there was one point me and Wrighty were going to be potentially being signed by Leicester. But then they didn't want to go for both. And then it was kind of me, from what I know, from what my agent told me, it was me they were going for. And then it was Wrighty, and then actually not going to go for both. And then they ended up going, no, we're going to go for Wrighty. So that was that. So then my agent has managed to speak to Giles White. And I played against, my first game for the seconds was against Hampshire. And Giles White was the second team coach at the time. And I'd scored 100 in that game. And I got wind that he was interested in getting me on trial. But because Warwickshire had made it reasonably clear that they were going to be signing me as such, he took a step back. But when it was out that I was looking for another club, he, you know, stepped in and spoke to my agent. So it was kind of, contract was being sorted. It was just kind of make sure the paperwork was all together. And then these players all went to different clubs. And then it was an afterthought of, well, we'll give you a year deal. And my agent said, well, you have to understand how much I've offered him a 2 year deal. And they didn't want to give me a second year. Well, they didn't want to give me a contract in the first place. So I was pretty bitter with that in the first place, not going to lie. But I thought, well, I'm just going to keep playing. And this may sound wrong, but I, in my head, it was kind of, I felt as though I'd given everything to the club. I was very, very fortunate. I was very lucky that Ash gave me the opportunity, but at the same time now, he doesn't feel as though I'm worth whatever it is I'm worth anymore. And I just thought, I'm playing, doing the best I can for you to offer me that second year. And I just wanted to say, no, I'm okay, thanks. I'm signing for Hampshire. And towards the end of the season, it must have got to September, beginning of September, then there was a second year there. But I'd already made my mind up long before that. That's why I turned it down. It wasn't me. I wasn't searching for a new club. I wasn't looking for greener pastures or anything like that. It was kind of, I was told on two occasions that within the space of 3 to 4 months, we're not going to be offering you a deal. Hence why I moved.
Well, no, that's fair enough, Barks. I'm going to be honest, I didn't know the inner workings behind that. So, yeah, as I said, if obviously I don't have the power to do that, but that isn't the decision I would have gone with. I think you can tell that by the way I've spoken in today's podcast. But in terms of hearing that initial news, considering the fact that you've given 10 years of service to the club, won multiple trophies, been a stalwart really for the Bears, in particular in Red Bull cricket, was that initial news incredibly hard to take? The fact that you've given so much to the club, you continue to give so much to the club throughout that season as well, 2018. I mean, the performances weren't exactly that bad with bat and ball in Division 2. I don't know, did that feel like a bit of a kick in the teeth, really, I suppose?
A little bit, yeah. But at the same time, from being in football, you know that's just sport and that's business. That's how, they've got a business to run. And that was a decision that he'd made, and that's what he was going to stick to his guns and of letting me know, we don't think you're this anymore. We think you're past it. We think, you're this, that, and the other. So I understand that is just the way the sport is. It's, you're there for a while, and then, a new team comes in. Like, for instance, now Warwickshire obviously won championship. That'll be remembered. That'll be the last memory that you'll have of the championship winning team, will be 2021. And, everyone has the time, and it's just now my time's up and I've got to look elsewhere. I'm just very fortunate that I got Hampshire were interested, because they've been brilliant and it's been a great club as well.
Well, that is wonderful to hear, Keith. It really is. But I just want to touch upon that there. Right, the memory of 2021. Trust me when I say this, and I'll remember this for the rest of my life, 2012. I really will. Never, ever feel as though you are not a legend at Warwickshire County Cricket Club. Because for a lot of people, in particular younger fans such as myself, and I imagine the young fans coming through, they'll probably have 2021 after that in, let's say, a decade's time. But for my generation, it is 2012. Of course it is. Yourself, Wrighty, Jeets, Rankin, Wokes, Troughton, Maddie, Trott, Bell. We'll never forget you guys. Okay, you were the seventh ever team to lift the county championship in our club's history. And I'm going to be honest, okay, my mate is called Harry. Okay, me and him, we used to absolutely love watching you play cricket for the Bears, not just in red ball cricket, but white ball as well. We saw you in the occasional T20 and 50 over stuff as well. But honestly, both of us, we didn't exactly have a nice reaction when you left, because it was like, we've seen this guy for, what, the best part of a decade. And then all of a sudden, that's gone. And it was quite upsetting, to be honest, at the time. So don't ever feel as though, you're not valued at Warwickshire, because you most definitely are. Let me tell you that right now. I mean, you saw it this season as well, 2021, when you came back, that incredible day one, and you came out to bat, and it was an incredible reception that you had at Edgbaston. So don't feel like that.
It's been brilliant. When I've come back, the members have been amazing, which that's when I was like, wow, I didn't realise I liked that much. I'm very happy that I'm seen as a good player of Warwickshire.
Legend, not a good player, legend, Keith. Okay, don't let anybody ever tell you otherwise as well. But I suppose that does bring us nicely onto your time at Hampshire. Now that we've, said the Warwickshire chapter, okay, I've got my Warwickshire bias out of the way for today's podcast. So let's have a little bit of a chat about your current county, which is, of course, the Southern County of Hampshire. So you've had, the best part of three seasons now in what's been a pretty good time, actually, for Hampshire. I mean, obviously, the championship this year, an incredible running. Would have been nice for the club to win their first one since 1973, but still a lot of positives to build off of heading into 2022 and beyond. In terms of your time at Hampshire so far, Keith, what do you say has been your personal highlights down at the Aegeus Bowl?
I'd say I've had some nice performances to look back on, this season especially. In my first season, it was, new squad, new members, kind of trying to fit in and see how you're going to go about being in the team, where you fit in with the ball, your role as a batter and stuff. The best thing at all I found is just there's quite a lot of, everything's quite open. There's quite a bit of freedom, which has helped me develop as a player, and even helping my teammates and becoming a bit more of a senior player to probably what I felt I was at Warwickshire. But I've had some good performances. I've still not got 100 here, which I'm determined to get. But like, yeah, I mean, I've just been happy to be part of it and be seen as like a senior player and trying to give as much help as I can to the squad.
Fair enough. Well, that's a very, very nice way of putting it, Keith. And in terms of this season, before we get onto the fan questions and the future aspirations to wrap up today's podcast, I have to ask about the running, that final round of the championship. It was absolutely extraordinary. It really was. 2021 came down to the wire. It came down to the last session on day four on Friday, the 24th of September at Edgbaston. But the day previous, we had the conclusion to that incredible game between Hampshire and Lancs up in Egbeth. So what can you remember from that day, that occasion, that game? What can you remember and recall from that extraordinary encounter in Liverpool?
I remember thinking, coming to that last day, I wish we'd have just got an extra 20 to 50 runs and we'd have them. But knowing that this will probably come down to the wire, I didn't think it had come down to being as close as what it ended up being. Like Mason Crane Mason switched it on out of nowhere, and it was, you're thinking, all right, they've lost a wicket, but they've still got four wickets left. They lost another one. They only need like 10. They lost another. Hang on a second. We're still in this. It was so close, and you're just in it, and you're in there. You're just trying to stick in the game, and just if we can just like get one or two wickets here, and it didn't happen at certain points, you're thinking this is those now, and you pick up a wicket, like we're maybe still in the game. It was, the emotions were up and down throughout that whole day. I think my head coach, he couldn't actually watch the game live in front of him. He was on the bus watching it on the TV screen. and if he'd hear anything, he'd look over and then watch it back 20 seconds later. It was so tense. It is the closest games I've been in, to be fair. And knowing that we were that far away from winning it after so many years of not, it was pretty tough pill to swallow.
I can imagine it was, but it was an amazing game of cricket, wasn't it? It really was. Mason Crane out of absolutely nowhere. And then at the end, when Matt Parkinson came out to bat, I mean, I genuinely thought one of the balls in particular almost kissed his outside edge. Beautiful Mason Crane leg break. And I thought, oh my goodness, he's going to edge this behind to Dane Vilas. Fortunately, he just pulled his bat away just in time. But a magnificent game of cricket. We've got that iconic piece of commentary now, haven't we? He sweeps as well, which will live on for the rest of time. But again, an amazing season 2021, obviously for the Bears as well, winning at Edgbaston. I was there for that to watch us lift the championship as well. And it's just going to be a season which will go down in history for many, many years to come, for all the right reasons as well. We had Luke Fletcher taking 66 wickets in the Champo. We had Glamorgan winning their first trophy in 17 years. Kent lifting the Blast for the first time in 14 years. I'll tell you what, 2022, it's got some living up to do, shall we say, from 2021. But Barks, before we get on to our chat about 2022 then, let's get into the fan questions for today's podcast. And the first one, should we go with the Joe Weatherly one first? What are you thinking, Keith? All right, fantastic. I'll just bring this up right now then. Fantastic. So this is from Joe Weatherly, your teammate down on the South Coast, a former guest here as well. He was an absolute pleasure, was Joe Weatherly. And Joe's question for you, Barks, was, is it true, Barks, that you have a loyalty card for a milkshake shop near Radlett Cricket Club? And if so, what's your go-to order?
No, I don't, as Weathers knows. Basically, Warwickshire days, I think we went out, me and a few other lads went out for some food, and we went to GBK in the mailbox. And I've been there many times before, and I'd have maybe an Oreo milkshake one time, caramel one another time, and then an Oreo milkshake another time, Oreo vanilla, and there was a caramel one. And this one time, I just felt as though I wanted to sample all three, but not mix them together, just sort of pick and choose which one I wanted. And I think we then played Surrey at Edgbaston. Jay Dernbach was speaking to Ricky Clark and saying, oh, yeah, I fancy a milkshake or something like that. And Clark goes, oh, Box has a few shakes, then the GBK. He said, oh, what do you have? I said, I said, well, kind of go for like a Oreo shake, caramel and vanilla. So, all right, sounds pretty good. So what, you have them all, like mix them all together? And Clark's like, nah, he has them all individually. So Jay thought that I had all three every time I went with a burger and downed them. But no, I just wanted to sample a bit of them. Hence the name Three Shakes Parker, which Clarkie called me. And this is Weather's way of trying to have a bit of banter with me, I think.
It's such a fantastic story. It really, really is. And a good question, that, from Joe Weatherly. We've learned the origin of the nickname as well. Fair play as well, GBK, Gourmet Burger Kitchen. Not a bad choice at all.
Yeah, I'll rate that.
I think judging by me, I've probably had a bit too much of that over the past few years. But moving on to our next question from Gary Oliver, who is aka Pompey Gaz. He's a Hampshire fan. Do you still want to play T20 cricket? Is that still an aspiration of yours? I think your last T20, was it in 2017, if I'm not mistaken?
I think it probably was, yeah.
It was 2017, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. When I signed here, it was kind of spoken about that chances are me playing the white ball format would be less likely because they wanted to go with a younger team and try and play a bit more exciting brand of cricket and just have young lads expressing themselves. But I'd definitely put my hand up if that opportunity came. It's made things a bit easier for me of just focusing on Red Bull. But yeah, I'd still love to be involved in any white ball stuff if it came available.
Fair enough. That'll be interesting in 2022 for the Hampshire Games, for the Hampshire Hawks, as you now know, in the T20 format. So we shall wait with eagerness for that one, Keith. Moving on to our next one. This is an interesting one from Craig. Craig Ellicott, he's a Bears fan. Keith, this is quite a tough question, actually. What do you think of the overall quality of the county championship now as opposed to other stages of your career? Is it something that's continually improving, or have there been particular peaks and troughs, in your opinion?
So there's peaks and troughs. I mean, it's the standard's not, I wouldn't say getting worse. I think when you throw more money into the T20 comps or the 100 comp comes along, it can water it down a little bit because lads are really starting to focus on those competitions to make a name for themselves or get themselves a deal and whatnot. And because the way our seasons are, where the formats are, they all interlink, basically, it's quite hard to actually go from T20 game or a T20 run and then 2 or 3 days later you're in a 4-day game. It's quite hard to then go from trying to clear your front leg and then, you know, keep your technique all in check as the ball's starting to swing and nip around. So it's a good question, actually. I think it's just the only difficult thing is lads being able to prep themselves to get back into the whatever format they're having to switch to. That's where I think the struggle is. I still think the standard's good, but you need more time to be able to get back into those modes of cricket.
I get what you mean. I imagine it is very, very hard to, you know, adapt, I suppose. As you said, T20 cricket is almost a completely different sport in terms of the approach, in terms of the mentality behind it compared to 4-day cricket. I mean, they are massively, massively polar opposites. But with that being said, I think in 2022, if I'm not mistaken, we are meant to have another round of midsummer games. So that actually may help with regards to that preparation. And the point with regards to the T20 and the 100 as well, I do get that. And that is something which I think is a concern to a number of county members. The only thing that I will say, and I'm not a massive fan of the 100, as people know from the podcast, but when it comes to the next generation of English cricketers, I do think we are in incredibly safe hands. I mean, down in Hampshire, Keith, you'll be able to tell people a lot better than I can, but you've got the likes of Tom Prest, you've got the likes of Scott Curry, you've got some brilliant, brilliant, brilliant young talent down there. You really have. At Warwickshire, we've got Jacob Bethel, Manraj Johal, George Garrett. The future's in safe hands, isn't it, in terms of the next generation of county cricketers?
Yeah, I'd agree with that, definitely. And there'll be more that will surface through within the next year or two. That's the good thing about the way the cricket's been going over here anyway, that there's some very good players coming through. So, yeah, like you said, in safe hands at the moment anyway.
Most certainly is. Someone who I forgot to mention, Toby Albert as well from Hampshire. Yeah, he's not a bad prospect either. I think he's playing in the T10. So, yep, another one Hampshire fans to watch out for heading into the future. And our final Twitter question for today, Keith, this is from Marco. And Marco asks, what do you find more rewarding, batting or bowling? And the statement behind this is quite nice from Marco. I ask because he always seems to put every ounce of effort into his bowling, but when he gets in the groove with the bats, it looks like it's no trouble at all.
That's because my body is limited to what I can do. So I have to give every answer that I've got to get that ball down there at 60 miles an hour. I think I enjoy whatever I'm doing. I seem to kind of get in that mode and enjoy. It's just that it looks a lot more physically demanding on my bowling than it does my batting. When I'm bowling, I'm just there to try and obviously take wickets and keep it nice and tight. I'm enjoying both just as much as each other. I couldn't say which one I prefer more, to be honest.
Fair enough, Barks. Fair enough. I mean, at the end of the day, 445 first-class wickets, 4,397 first-class runs as well. I think it's safe to say all-rounder, yeah, in terms of your cricket. You're good at both, let's be honest. I mean, you're very, very fortunate and you've been absolutely brilliant over the years with both bat and ball in hand for the Bears and for Hampshire. And talking to Hampshire, Keith, our final question for today's podcast revolves around 2022. It's not that far away now. The season is, what, 4 or 5 months away? It's absolutely flown by already. What are your aspirations from both an individual and a team perspective with the Southern County heading into 2022?
I think every player, no matter what their age, even Darren Stevens, will still be looking to outdo his last season, and I'm the exact same. I still want to do better than I have. I understand that your body starts to deal with things differently, but performances wise, still want to be able to give everything I can and still put in those performances. As a club, I know we will be similar to what Warwickshire were, finishing, they'll come into that last day and not getting over the line. I think there'll be, and also with the finals day as well, nearly getting there, there's going to be a big push and a lot of focus on trying to win as much as we can. I know every club will say that, but no, it's given us probably a bit more of a kick to really, really fight as hard as we can. And I think for myself personally, again, I think just trying to help develop players. Obviously, I've played long enough now that I should be giving even more back than what I had previously, even when I was at Warwickshire. And I'm trying to get my badges and stuff. I've done like level 3, so I'm trying to actually get more into that side of stuff of coaching and any bit of help I can give, any bit of advice I'm trying to give and stuff like that. So last season, Alfonso Thomas was with the with the women's team. I forgot the name.
Southern Vipers. So,
yeah, sorry. So he was there, and I was doing some stuff with the first team of the 50 over cricket, which was quite nice to just be involved in doing that. So part of that kind of mentoring role and trying to help the lads in any way, shape or form.
Well, Barks, it goes without saying, but honestly, I'm wishing yourself and Hampshire nothing but the very best of luck heading into the 2022 season. I'm excited as well about the coaching. That'll be quite cool. And fingers crossed you get the chance to help out the next generation in a coaching capacity one day. I think that'd be absolutely fantastic. Got so much wisdom, so much advice, so much insight that you could pass on to the next generation. I think that'd be quite a nice way to keep in the game, to be honest, Keith, when retirement does come one day. Hopefully no time soon, though. Okay, we still want a few more years of Keith Barker in county cricket. Let me just tell you that right now. But Keith, I think that is a good way to end what has been an absolutely brilliant episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I've loved every single minute of it. I mean, what did we say before the recording? Good things come to those who wait. And I think that has definitely been proven true in today's episode. So before we say our goodbyes, Keith, do you have anything to quickly plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
Not really. I mean, just if anyone wants any one-to-one coaching, I'm trying to get some more. Basically, I tend to do my level 4, but I've not basically had enough coaching as such. So I need to do a bit more of that. So if anyone wants some of that, get in touch with Hampshire and, you know, try and sort something out, basically. Other than that, nothing else to promote. No.
Fair enough, Keith. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll leave your Twitter in the podcast description as well. So if you want to go and follow Keith on Twitter and Instagram as well. Do you want your Instagram in there, Keith?
Yeah, you can do. Yeah, no problem.
All right, we'll leave both then. So there you go, folks. If you want to go and follow Keith on either Instagram or Twitter, we'll leave the links to those in the podcast description below. But that is pretty much it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.